Welcome to this podcast produced by Imagine, your resource for early childhood music therapy. Imagine is produced by Della Vista Publisher and can be found on the web at www.imagine.musictherapy.biz. The title of this podcast is Adapt to Connect and features Matt Logan in an interview with Alex Raffner.
Hello, I'm Alex, one of the assistant editors of the Imagine magazine. Welcome, Matt. Thank you so much for joining me today on this Imagine podcast.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here.
So as music therapists, we know that when we think outside the box, we can create successful music experiences for children of all ability levels. In this year's Imagine podcast series, we would like to find out how you make music accessible to young learners, what kind of adaptation you make or assistance you give, and in which ways this support transforms the participation and engagement of your clients. So here are 10 questions for you. First, where do you work and what is your role?
Yes. So my name is Matt Logan. I work at UCSF Benioff Children's Hospital, San Francisco. In San Francisco, California. I'm a music therapist. I work with a great team. We cover all inpatient units, and I am assigned to pediatric hematology, oncology, blood and marrow transplant, and neuro rehab.
All right, quite the assortment there.
Yes.
So what everyday situations come to your mind when you hear about adaptive music making in early childhood settings?
Sure, when I think about adaptive music making, I kind of think about all of my music making in the children's hospital as being adaptive. So in a more traditional sense, I think of adaptive as being approaches to teaching instruments that are on this unofficial list of kind of the standard instruments, like piano or guitar, or I don't know, maybe even clarinet or something like that. But with patients who are four and under, which I think is kind of the category of patients that we're talking about. And I say patients, I know some people say clients, but my clients are patients, so I'll probably use that term. I'm never really teaching music. What I'm trying to do is build a connection with a small human, and I'm trying to nurture a love for music. Now, I'll use adaptive instruments, I suppose, or adaptive approaches to do that. But ultimately what I'm trying to do is just provide rich stimuli to inspire connection, to inspire trust, maybe some curiosity and creativity and expressivity. And so I have to select the tools that will, I guess, make that possible. And so I guess that's through instrument selection. I'll use a lot of pentatonic keyboard instruments or rhythm instruments, something that sounds good but provides like an optimal level of challenge. And then the other tool would be the song selection. What songs am I using? What songs are important to this family or important to this child?
That's great. So in what ways can adaptive music making support access and a sense of belonging for young children?
Sure. So selecting instruments, first of all, that allow for successful contribution to some sort of music making experience that's either in a dyad or in a group consisting of family members, siblings, or other hospital staff. So I'm not going to provide an instrument that is just, you know, beyond their abilities so that they can't really do anything. So have to start from a place where they're able to contribute. And then, like I said, including other people in the hospital setting where all of my work happens. And that can be pulling in really anybody who's in the room. It might be pulling in someone who's there to take out the garbage or change the sharps container or deliver a food tray, or it's the nurse, or it's the doctor, the whole medical team. It's a teaching hospital. So sometimes six people just show up and then all of a sudden they're in your session. Using those opportunities to include everyone. And that is, I find that really levels the playing field in a sense. A lot of grownups have inhibitions that our younger patients don't have, and that kind of comes across too. But they'll they're a little bit uncomfortable, and suddenly everybody's on the same level and contributing to this musical experience. So it's I find that it is incredibly inclusive in that respect.
That's
And
wonderful. I love how you can kind of pull in the whole medical team and put everybody on the same level, and then all of a sudden the child doesn't feel so out of place or uncomfortable because everybody else might be feeling uncomfortable too.
Exactly. As we're all in this together, and that dynamic of white coat expert versus small child who doesn't have a lot of say in things, that dynamic has kind of been turned upside down, or at least leveled out in some fashion.
That's wonderful. So you mentioned it briefly about how you might adapt certain instruments to make sure that the child can play them. Do you have any tips on how you might adapt instruments or music lessons?
So I don't adapt the instruments themselves very often. Sometimes I'll build up a mallet or something like that, especially in my rehab work, if grasp is a challenge. But I'll be very specific in my choice of instruments so that they are well suited to the child's developmental level, their abilities, and also what is of interest to them that caters to their own curiosity. So choosing instruments, I mentioned this earlier, but I really love pentatonic keyboard instruments, or taking instruments that I can take keys off and make them pentatonic. I love those. And then the responsibility is the adaptation then happens at the provider level, the music therapist level, where I have to create a musical experience that is aesthetically pleasing. So if I've given a child a C pentatonic, major pentatonic glockenspiel, but then I play in D or A, I've created something that's sonically not pleasing, right? And so the responsibility is on me to adapt the sonic environment so that what the child is playing, what they're creating is it has some quality to it. I mentioned bringing instruments that inspire curiosity, and I see kids over a long period of time, and so that kind of list of instruments has to change to maintain that novelty. It's not everything, but it is important to kind of maintain that curiosity and that sense of wonder about what's going to appear next.
So, have you used any assistive technology, and how have you done that meaningfully?
Back when like the iPad first came out, it was still fairly novel. I used to use that from time to time. Like there's a program called Thumb Jam, where I could set up either a major scale or a pentatonic scale in a specific key. And the novelty of that really allowed me to connect with a patient and then maybe move into some other areas. But now everybody has a tablet, including like 3-year-olds, in their thick foam case, and now it's almost more of an impediment to building a connection, and it's not novel at all. So I use the iPad less and less, I find, especially with the real young kids. And I know there are other assistive technologies, but I'm kind of an analog guy now, like real instruments. I suppose in a way, instruments are technology, but I don't use a lot of assistive technology, and I don't have a need to with my particular population.
Yeah, I think that's great as well. Sometimes in the work that we do, we don't necessarily need to use it so much, and just being in a room with a kid and an instrument is all we need.
Yes, agreed.
So which non-standard music notation is a good option for young children if you use one?
I don't really use any music notation systems for young children, as just because my approach is a little more improvisation based or development focused. I can't even really think of a time when I've tried to use a music notation system. It's either teaching by rote or just allowing for complete free expression and exploration.
Awesome. Do you do much songwriting with children?
I do, but not like what we would probably normally think of as songwriting. You work in a children's hospital, so you probably understand there's like songwriting, sitting down and writing a song, and then there's spontaneous singing about rainbows and unicorns and whatever is of interest to the patient. So it's a little more improvised songwriting in a sense that's not necessarily captured on paper or on a recording. Well, it might be captured on mom's or dad's cell phone, you know, and that's where it will live. But it's these kids in this age range are so in the present, so in the moment, that writing a song for the future doesn't always make sense. It's more like, what are we creating right now? Where is our imagination taking us right now?
What kind of non-traditional music making environments come to your mind?
Well, I think on the one hand, you could say a hospital is not a traditional music making environment. And yet I think we've kind of changed that, and I'm guessing at your hospital too. Using music with healing practices certainly predates like the modern hospital. So I guess if you're operating with the conviction that music, making music at any age is a normal thing, is a traditional thing to be doing, then any environment can be a traditional place of making music. And we have worked really hard to try to make our hospital a place where music happens. And that's part of the culture of the hospital. And I know there are many other children's hospitals or adult hospitals where music happens here. And it just becomes built in to the culture. So once that happens, it's almost hard to imagine it being separated, and it can become easy to take it for granted. And it's, people expect to hear melodies floating down the hallway, right? If I had my way, every environment would or could be a music making environment.
So what is your top advice for adaptive music making in early childhood settings or in the hospital?
I think my top advice is to prioritize connection. The kids that I'm working with don't typically have, they might have developmental delay or like a speech delay, motor delay, but that's typically not a primary problem. I'm working mostly with kids who have problems of trust and of connection and trusting grown-ups around them, just because they don't have a full understanding of what's happening to them and their bodies and all of the different things that they have to do. So I go in thinking, how can I create a musical experience where they can express what they want to do or what is inside of them and not think about what I want them to do? Because everybody else wants them to do something, and everybody else is trying to connect with them through words. They're trying to verbally connect and explain things that, you know, just usually in developmentally, in ways that are not appropriate developmentally. So being open to that connection through the music itself, and through nonverbal interactions. I think those are my two points, and prioritizing connection and letting that connection happen through the music.
Awesome. So do you have any resources that you might recommend?
I'd say the book Free Play by Stephen Nachmanovich. I really like Eric Erickson's Psychosocial Stages, especially, that seems to be really a nice framework for me and my work and in the units that I work in. Anything by Sherry Robb related to supporting autonomy, like her contextual support model, I make all my interns read that. I love Helen Schumark's articles, especially on like the musical self, it encourages us to really take into account the musical identity of a patient and a family and how important that is to our assessment and care. At least that's what I get out of that article. It is a rich article, so there's a lot there, but that's one of the gems.
Well, Matt, thank you so much for your insights. We really appreciate it. I feel like I learned something, which is why I love doing these podcasts. Thank you.
It was a lot of fun. Thank you, Alex.
Thank you for listening to this Imagine podcast produced in 2023.